Hello, we are the Eternal Debate, and this is our second of our new episodes.
I thought you were just going to go with it's our second episode. I was like, are we just discounting everything we did before our little...
No, we do an improve for 2024.
Yes. Okay. So we are the Eternal Debate. I am Rachel Carline.
I am Andy Floyd. And this is...
Restricted cervical injection.
No, producer Simon. We didn't mention him at all last time.
We didn't.
And we've had so much feedback on the socials. Everybody's missed Si.
Well,
and we were so wrapped up in our own importance. The producer of the whole thing wasn't acknowledged.
But producer Si has orchestrated that perfectly because he set himself up without a microphone, so he can't say hi.
Yes,
so
he can. If we're talking on a microphone, if he says hi, okay. I think he's waving for those.
He's waving. So, as I said a moment ago, because I got confused.
What did you say a moment ago?
What this episode is about. So this episode is about restricted cervical injection. And we have talked about this.
Did you say that was what this episode was about?
Well, you said,
and
this is...
the restricted cervical injection.
Oh my God.
But what does that mean?
What
does anything mean?
What's happened to you? Like, you're so giddy. Do we need to take the chocolate off you?
I've had a truffle.
truffle. You said that. You sounded northern. You had an accent then. So we've
Says you.
Yeah, but I've always got an accent.
Come on, we've got things to talk about.
Right.
Restricted cervical injections.
I am trying to talk about it. So we've talked about this injection technique. We talked about it in episode 15 about edema. We've touched on it. We've referred to it, but we've never done a fully quantified explanation
of it,
what it is and how to do it.
So what is it? How do we do it successfully?
Well, before we get into it, I think we need to just talk about some directional terms.
Ground rules.
Ground rules need to be that you control your impulses. So before we begin, let's just clear up some directional terms because we're going to be using them.
We talk professionally, therefore we must use medical terminology for our directions.
Why did you sound like AI or something then?
Did you know AI can't do maths?
No.
That's why they put sums to check that you're not a robot.
Oh. Really?
Yeah.
That's interesting. What a nugget of irrelevant information that was.
It might only be complex sums it can't do, because otherwise you'd say a calculator. Anyway.
pulling it back. So directional terms then. So when we are talking about a restricted cervical injection, we are talking about a technique that relates to embalming a deceased person. So therefore, a deceased person will be...
generally in the supine position.
And what does that mean?
Lay on their back.
So they lay on the back. So when we're talking about directional terms, so certainly, well, there's two that we're going to be using quite a lot in this episode. And they would be proximal.
Towards the body.
And distal.
Away from the body.
Okay. So we are going to be talking about the vessels in the neck, which lead to the...
head.
Head. Okay. The head and the neck are attached to the...
body.
Okay. So when we are talking towards the head...
that is a distal injection.
Yep. That would be distal or distal intubation, depending on what we're doing when we're talking about this. And then if we're talking about towards the body...
proximal.
That will be proximal. Okay. So we have a case in front
of us.
Have
we set our stall out?
Well, I think so.
Oh, good. Was that clear?
I think so.
Did that make sense, producer Si?
Yes.
Thumbs up.
Okay. So we've got a deceased in front of us. We have identified the fact that we want to treat the body with a different arterial solution than what we want to put into the head.
Why?
Because that's what it needs. So do you want an actual... why? So... do you want an example?
Yeah, edema's a good example.
Edema is always a good example.
It's very rare,
that it's in
for
the face.
For somebody with edema to be affected in the face.
Or if it is in the face, you can usually correct it with the positioning. And then...
Because generally that's gravitational edema.
Yeah.
All of this in the edema episode.
Let's not get bogged
from
down.
See, this
is why I didn't want to start getting bogged down using examples. So with regards to... So we might be treating somebody with a high index, maybe additional co-injections in the body that aren't required in the face. And actually we want a lower dilution strength to the face, but maybe we want to have some... additional co-injection, like maybe a humectant, but that's all we need for the face.
So essentially, the restricted cervical technique empowers the embalmer to be able to be selective in the non-autopsy case about what fluids go where.
Yeah. And why would we keep the head? Like,
if we're using edema as the example...
Mm-hmm.
The accumulation of the tissue fluid is generally affecting the areas around the torso and the limbs.
Yeah. Yep.
And you can have situations where you have a case that is very obviously has an increased fluid content in the body, but the facial features can be almost skeletal.
Mm. Yeah. I mean, I think as an example, for a time where I've used a restricted cervical injection, it was somebody who was going to be a long hold. Not excessive, don't get me wrong, like 6 weeks or whatever, but facially, I didn't want to use a really high index solution because I didn't want to cause that dehydration. Mm. I didn't want that post-embalming dehydration. I still wanted the facial features to look natural, be supple. So actually what I did with the face, it was quite... It needed to be different.
Yeah, there's a key point that we can make, something that everybody, all the listeners can do now themselves, as we can. If you touch any part of your face, any part of your face...
Andy says, poking his forehead,
you can
chin.
Touch or palpate to the bone.
Yes. Yeah.
There aren't many, if any, areas of your face where you can't push down to bone. So that shows you that the tissue content around the face is much less than what you have in the rest of the body, because if you were to palpate any other part of your body, there are areas where you definitely can say, I cannot touch bone.
Yeah.
It shows there is more tissue substance.
Yes.
So when we're talking about the preservative demand of tissue, we can understand that the final concentration that we set ourselves is based on the preservative demand of the particular tissue that we're going to introduce it to.
Yeah.
So if you've got deeper areas of tissue, then it stands to reason that you would need slightly higher final concentrations in order to make sure you successfully and thoroughly saturate and preserve that tissue.
Yeah.
So... what I'm trying to say there is if you're using, for example, a 4%, for sake of argument, final concentration, then to direct that same concentration towards the head would have a far more dehydrative effect on the tissue of the head than it would on the rest of the body, for the simple reason that there's not as much tissue in the head, face, to preserve.
Yeah.
So a lower amount can go a longer way, we say.
And I think our last episode, we talked about waterless and we talked about using a restricted cervical injection for that.
Mm-hmm.
Now, one of the things that I know we didn't mention as one of the considerations was setting the features. Now, if I was using restricted and I was completing a waterless embalming, I would still be setting the features beforehand in a preliminary way. But ultimately, when I'm doing a restricted, I like having the control over the face, which is what people are going to see.
Mm.
And when you do a true restricted, and I say true because one of the things that people...
There is a misconception when we talk about the term restricted cervical.
Yes, there is. But actually, I like the idea that that face is protected from overfilling or whatever it may be whilst I'm focusing on getting the saturation and the needs of the body met in a way that's not going to negatively impact on.
So I think the first thing we need to make absolutely clear is just by raising both the left and the right common carotid artery, that in itself does not warrant the term restricted cervical technique.
You've just raised two vessels.
You've raised two.
Yeah.
It's a two-point injection, essentially.
Yeah.
So the name suggests that we should restrict.
Yeah. So before we get into then the vessels and actually completing it, so we've got our deceased in front of us, hypothetical deceased. We've identified the need for a restricted cervical injection because we want to treat the head separately. Let's just talk about equipment then. So what are we going to need? What do we want to have by our side now that we can lay our hands on, that we can set up?
So what do we need that's different to our usual?
That's different to our usual,
okay.
Or even different from just raising two carotids.
So I would suggest in the first instance, we need two drainage tubes.
Yes.
Now, when we say drainage tubes, we're really talking about the more flexible plastic options in this instance.
Yeah. Well, I think they're a good one to talk about. Let's just use that anyway. There are variants.
Yes, the orange-ended catheter tubes generally are a good size.
Yep.
But if you're going to use those, make sure that you cut the ends off them so that you've got a hollow tube.
No, it will depend on your supplier because some of them come without a blunt end anywhere.
Oh, do they?
They do, but they're still
I only say that because there's a misconception sometimes. Yeah. All plastic tubing is drainage tubing, and that's not correct.
And that's not because there is injection as well.
There are arterial plastic tubes.
Yeah, and I mean, I always injected with metal drainage tubes up until about a year and a half ago. And then because I've embalmed...
Or metal cannulas.
Cannulas. Because I've been embalming here, there and everywhere in environments that were, well, aren't my own, I've used whatever equipment's there. So I've actually...
Adapted. In some cases.
And
isn't it eye-opening?
It is. Yes. Anyway, we digress. So two plastic tubes.
Yeah. We want two tubes. And the purpose of these tubes is that they're going to be introduced distally to the two common carotid arteries, the left and the right.
So we are using them to drain, but from the arteries.
Correct.
So, but again, we're going to come on to that, aren't we? Mm-hmm. So we've got those. Now,
but
if
because we are going to use them to drain...
Yes. What are we going to drain them into?
Exactly. We can't just leave the two ends of these tubes because we are going to anticipate...
Return.
The return of pure arterial fluid.
Yes. Which, from a health and safety point of view, we do not want... Yes, we need to control that. So, what are we going to collect it into then to control that so that we're managing the situation?
Well, the answer to that can vary, but I would suggest that a suitable container...
So, I suppose we say suitable. Now, we can already picture what we would use, but that's not going to be really that helpful for other people. So... I personally use the bottles that the co-injection that I've used. I'll typically just give them a little bit of a rinse or whatever, but they're what I would use to collect my return. Now
would they be...
So...
What capacity?
Well, and I'm going to come on to that. Mm-hmm. So when I use the 1 litre ones, they're rounded in shape. Now it's good because they hold a litre. However, they are... larger, and they're also rounded. So if I've got a deceased who maybe is taking up quite a lot of the space on the embalming table, on the tray, I don't then want a rounded bottle that's quite large rolling around. So I have on occasion used... I don't just have access to bottles from one manufacturer.
Mm-hmm.
So some of the bottles are the 500ml, which are kind of squared off. Now, they are quite good for this purpose because, again, because they don't roll around and they're smaller. Now, that said, because they're smaller, they may fill up. And if they fill up, you need to have maybe an extra one because there is potential that you're going to need to do a quick change partway through and you still want to be managing that, in my opinion. So I don't know if you have an alternative receptacle.
Yeah. I mean, the receptacles I tend to use are readily available from most supermarkets, right. The condiment jars.
Right, okay.
They can either be glass or they can be durable plastic in consistency. Right. Generally come with vacuum suction lids.
Right, okay, so yeah.
And I would tend to just drill appropriate holes
right.
into the top of those lids that would then
so the tubes
fit
like,
the tubes so, nicely
so,
into them.
Yeah, because that's the other thing. So you're doing something manually to the top of the container
mm.
that accepts the tube, whereas that's where I'm a little bit more, I use cling wrap
okay,
or
yeah.
cellophane.
And actually, in fairness, you know, cling wrap can still achieve the same purpose and that could still be utilised with the condiment jars.
Yeah, yeah.
I mean, what we're looking to achieve here is a receptacle
mm-hmm.
that's going to contain both the fluid and the fumes.
Exactly that.
So
it's
from
not a fume though, it's a vapor.
Oh, a vapor. Sorry. Rachel's been on a course. Apologies if I get my fumes and my vapors the wrong way around.
Okay, so we've got our tubes. We've got our containers that are going to be suitably containing the liquid and the vapours. So with that in mind then, let's take a short break. And then after the break, we can talk about the vessels, more on how to actually put the technique into practice and the considerations that you'll need to do that.
Bring it on, I need a brew.
Did you know you can find The Eternal Debate on Facebook, Instagram and Twitter?
Be sure to follow us to keep up to date with future episodes or even suggest future topics.
And share us with people who you think might enjoy our content. Welcome back. So jumping straight in then.
Oh, what are we jumping into? I nearly knocked something over, sorry.
Chaotic.
What are we jumping
even
into?
Even when you're being relatively quiet. restricted cervical injection.
I know that much.
So I've had it asked of me.
Oh, what's been asked of you?
I
never ask anything of you, Ray.
Hmm. So in terms of basically people say to me, I use
restricted. Why doesn't it work?
It doesn't work. There's still fluid in the face.
Why doesn't it work?
So and that's the whole point of this now, isn't it? So by us talking about the setup, so let's go from making the incisions.
So we've got to just bring it back to its basics and we've got to say we do not want the fluid that we are introducing proximally
mm-hmm.
down one of our common carotid arteries
mm-hmm.
towards the body
mm-hmm.
to be able to get to the face and the head.
Yeah.
Now, from an anterior circulatory route,
mm-hmm.
we as the embalmer can influence that.
Yeah.
By ligating.
Yes.
The proximal end of one of our common carotid arteries, the opposite one.
Yeah.
That we're injecting towards the body on.
Yes.
Because if you follow it in your mind, you can appreciate that that fluid will circulate through the body.
Yep.
And then when it comes on its return journey back, it's not going to be able to get up the other side.
And I think it's
via
the
opposing common carotid artery.
So to tie off, to ligate that part, that's fine.
Mm-hmm.
Now,
that's the sum total of our control.
Yes. Now, if you clamp off or loosely ligate the distal ends, the fluid that makes its way into the head via the vertebral arteries, where's it going?
So we've got to make it clear that there is a posterior circulatory route. There is a deeper circulatory route, which also provides blood in life to the brain and to the face.
Yeah. So, and embalmers are typically aware of the circle of Willis.
Correct. That's the expression for the anastomosis.
Yes.
Which is the key factor in all of this.
Whilst we're on this topic, because I think it's interesting to share, because I myself am guilty of using the term collateral circulation when I'm talking about this.
Okay.
Now, it's not actually.
No. This whole blood... Let's talk about the physiological... Yes. Situation that's occurring in you and I and everybody listening right now. Okay. We are providing blood to our head and face via two routes.
Yes.
The majority arrives through the common carotid arteries and travels superiorly in life because we're generally stood up.
Yes.
But there is a posterior back route, as it were.
Yep.
And there are two arteries that arise from the subclavian arteries.
And those are
the vertebral arteries. Yep. The left and the right vertebral arteries. They are deep arteries. And as they arise from the subclavian, they actually kink backwards, for want of a better expression, and then they rise through the foramina of the cervical vertebra.
Yep.
So the foramina are the little holes within the bones, the lateral processes of the bone of the spine, essentially.
Yep.
So they are well protected. So they're out of reach for most embalmers. I'm not saying that they're not accessible, but it's not easily accessible.
Yeah.
When they emerge from the cervical foramina, they emerge through the foramen magnum, which is the big hole in the occipital bone of your cranium, and they join together. The left and the right vertebral arteries come together to form the basilar artery. And that artery then continues to what we understand as the anastomosis, which is the circle of Willis.
Yep.
And it's a roundabout effect.
Mm-hmm.
When I say a roundabout effect, it's purposely designed so that when the blood arrives, it slows down and it equally distributes to supply the brain.
Mm-hmm. So the anastomosis is, it's already there, isn't it?
It's planned.
You were born with it. It's there.
That's what makes it different to collateral circulation.
And I think it's key that we talk about this because, as I say, I am...
There are some textbooks that use the term, unfortunately and incorrectly.
Yes. Because collateral circulation is actually the blood flow.
A collateral circulation is a response to injury for the most part. If you've damaged vessels, then the body's ability to create a new network is a collateral.
Yeah. So it's so clever, isn't it? Like, it genuinely is amazing.
The body's amazing. But anyway, just taking things back, the key principle here is that there are two routes in life, blood to get to the brain and to the face.
So therefore,
in death, our arterial solution, even though we've restricted the flow from the anterior route,
I know we said about directional terms. I don't think we actually talked about anterior and posterior. So anterior, front of the body, posterior, back of the body.
Correct.
So we have restricted the route anteriorly with those common carotid arteries being raised.
Just by ligating the one that we're not injecting towards the body on.
Yeah.
Correct. So that's going to severely limit what fluid can get through that anterior or front access route to the head.
But it doesn't take away from the fact
that some of our arterial solution will take the vertebral route.
And therefore, because it's taken that route, it will it will be in the head, it will be in the face. So if we don't do anything to keep those distal portions of the carotid arteries open,
yeah, and
they can't go anywhere.
The key thing here is that they must be opened.
Mm-hmm.
Because to be left in their natural state is a partial collapse.
So it's a partial collapse,
because they're
also
not full of blood or a fluid.
Mm-hmm. The other thing as well to mention is when you've set yourself up, don't leave your aneurysm hook underneath, because if you've not intubated the distal common carotid artery and you leave an aneurysm hook under, again, that's putting pressure on that vessel.
I would actually argue that the aneurysm hook's not the most appropriate instrument anyway.
Mm-hmm.
A separator should be used for that purpose, because it's significantly thinner than the handle of an aneurysm hook. But even so,
mm-hmm.
the point is well made. You shouldn't be having anything that's going to cause a kink or a closure of the artery. So what we're doing is intubating distally. We're placing these plastic drainage tubes, because by inserting them a good way in,
mm-hmm.
we are appreciating that the common carotid transitions to the internal carotid artery.
Mm-hmm.
And the internal carotid artery is the one that directly communicates with the circle of Willis.
Yep.
Which is where the fluid that we have no control over will arrive.
We'll come to, yeah.
So we're creating what we call a path of least resistance.
Which is the path that the fluid
will want to take.
Yeah.
Correct.
So we've made our two incisions.
Mm-hmm.
We've raised both our common carotid arteries. We have introduced our cannula, which is going to introduce the arterial fluid into the body. That's in. The opposite proximal end, so the one that you're not injecting in, we've ligated that, so that's, mm-hmm. that's tied off.
And I think it's really worth mentioning that it does not matter which
of
the two
right.
common carotid arteries you decide to use for your proximal injection towards mm-hmm. the body. You could argue that the left is actually a mm-hmm. little bit more advantageous, because it's direct access to the arch of the aorta, which is the centre of distribution.
I think you, for me, the reason why I end up typically using the right is actually just because if I was doing the dreamy idea of a one-point injection, I'd want the right internal jugular vein.
And we still do.
And we still do for
this.
And
that's yep. It's well worth making that point, because we are still affecting drainage in this case.
Yeah. We still need
to intubate that proximal portion of mm-hmm. the right internal jugular vein. That's why my argument would be to make your injection on the left side.
Yeah, because so it's actually
you can
less
keep
going
things
on.
Clean.
Yeah.
You can say all my arterial things, left side. Right side.
Which, to be honest, isn't the way that I do it, but I am actually going to have a go at doing it that way. Because certainly as well, if I'm mentoring, because it does just, when you're doing this true restricted, especially the first few times you do it, my gosh, it feels like there is so much going on.
Mm.
But also the benefit and the result far, in my opinion, outweighs,
the extra investment.
And you do get
used
to it.
Yeah, you do. Yeah,
like
you
anything.
You have to do a couple. And once you seeing is believing, you see the results, you will default to doing it again and again. And, I would argue that out of every 10 cases I look after, 3, possibly 4, would be restricted. And I know we'll talk in a short while about some of the reasons why we would do it. But let's stay with the mm-hmm. process.
Yep.
So my advice, I've said it doesn't matter if it's the left or the right, but if you choose the right, you've no choice but to, or if you're going to affect decent drainage, you've no choice but to utilise the right internal jugular vein. So you'll have a lot going on that right-hand side. fine if you can manage it, or split it between the two.
See, I'm thinking now just for me, because I use a metal drainage tube, proximally, and it has the like plunger effect for opening closing. So, and because people have typically been dead quite a while, I'll find that I do need to pump that to break those closes.
So the distal portion.
Yeah. I mean, I use plastic. Plastic distally, but just in that action while you're, because there's movement involved with that. So having your injection equipment on the other side, actually you've got less to disrupt as you're doing that. So I'm just thinking out loud, to be fair.
Either way, all we're saying is that the side that you're not injecting through, make sure that that's ligated, because that is the restriction in your restricted cervical.
Yeah.
But that alone does not
stop fluid
the arterial solution from being able to get to the face.
Yes.
Unless you provide that path of least resistance for the fluid, which is achieved by intubating distally on both common carotid arteries.
Yes.
That's the importance of those drainage tubes being placed into a container, because what you're going to do there is see
how
much
fluid
has taken the back route. And it will be more than usual, because you've restricted the front route.
Yeah.
So you're almost forcing it to only go the one way. So it's a really key point to make, because that all of what you collect in that receptacle that's diverted from the circle of Willis is what would, or a good portion of that would have
gone
to the face.
Yeah.
Because it would have taken the external carotid route, because there wouldn't have been a path of least resistance present to encourage it to come out.
Yeah.
That's the key thing.
So in doing that, we're going to allow it to come out. So therefore, it's not getting trapped, basically. So
you will start to see that all of your characteristics associated with a proper embalming, so distension of vessels, colour change, texture change, will all start happening as you expect it to in the main torso limbs of the body. But you will see a very definite difference in coloration and texture when you look at the head.
Now, and I think as well, it's worth mentioning at this point. So I've been with embalmers and who have been using restricted but not intubating the distal portion, and they then have to stop what they're doing because the head has reached saturation, but actually they've not saturated the body, so then they then have to raise additional vessels and take them. Now, I'm not saying you won't ever have to raise additional vessels. You will. You're always going to get other reasons why that might occur. But actually, when you protect the head in this way, you can focus on keeping going and getting that fluid to where it needs to be within the body without that head basically reaching saturation and then having to...
And it also gives you the green light to raise pressures.
Yep.
And use higher rates of flow than you might normally, because you know and you've got the confidence that you're not going to affect any of the features associated with the face.
Which again is the presentation benefit, isn't it?
It's really only the face that we're concerned about restricting, because, you know, some of the fluid we have to accept from the circle of Willis is going to get to the brain.
Yeah.
But that's fine.
Yeah.
If we have a stronger fluid embalming the brain, then that's not a problem.
No.
Because it's not something that's going to be visual. It's not something that's going to affect presentation.
Nope.
And it gives us the assurance that we've got soft tissue
that's being well fixed. Yeah.
So it really is, the focus is on the face.
Yeah.
Where we're just going to be a little bit careful is the fact that one of the branches of the internal carotid artery is the ophthalmics, which reach the eyes.
Yeah.
But that said, that's only a small branch, and if there is a path of least resistance in place, the fluid will not want to take it.
Mm.
It will want to go past it and leave.
As in, it will not want to take the ophthalmic artery route. It will want to take the path of least...
Correct, yeah, which is the bigger opening, which is why we've intubated distally on the common carotids.
So, benefit-wise then, because obviously we've talked about the presentation benefits, haven't we?
So, benefits-wise, we have successfully embalmed a challenging body with generally a much higher concentration of total solution. Also, we've not been afraid that any of that solution would get to the features of the face. So that's benefit number one. We've treated the body entirely differently to how we would want
to treat
the head to be treated.
Yeah.
So advantage number two is now when we are comfortable that we've achieved that thorough saturation of the body, we can now turn our attention to the head with a completely different fluid mix.
It can be
one that's appropriate.
So if we want to reduce that total dilution strength,
we can use a different index fluid, we can use a different concentration of total solution, which we would. We can use additives that we might not have felt were necessary for the body, such as humectant bases, whereas we might have needed to have used additional disinfectant for the body. That's generally not needed
for the
head and the face. So there's lots of different reasons why we'd need something different for just the face. And the beauty now is that we've got access to both sides.
Yeah.
We've got access from the left and the right common carotid, which means symmetry will be much easier to achieve.
Yeah. Yeah. And I think when we're talking about that, I think it's worth discussing that whilst you don't necessarily just need to inject one side and then completely close off and then try, you can go back and forth if you want to do it, maybe incrementally if there's a challenge there. Maybe you want to stand at the head of the table. I always recommend that anyway, because then you're looking down from the top of the head down the face.
Mm-hmm.
So then you can and as well consider using feel, not just your eyes.
Well, embalming is more than colour change.
Yes, it is.
You know, texture is important.
Also
worth saying that if you use additional dye,
whereas
normally we would recommend about 10 mils of dye for a full body embalming, if you are just going to make a solution that's only for the head and the face, because we've said the tissue is so much less in that area, then you only really need about 2 mil. You might think, well, it's not even worth putting in. Trust me, it is, but it has to be well thought out.
Yeah, yeah, you don't want to put a 10 mil.
No, unless there are sometimes calls for that in jaundice cases, for example, but that's for another.
But again, and I think this is where it's key, that everything is done per the individual's needs.
Yes, indeed.
Which we say all the time, but because it's valid. So, negatives. Now, I'm not sure that I would ever say there's a negative, but there are definitely considerations.
There are considerations. But if you've opted for a restrictical? A restrictical cervical.
Oh my God, let's coin that. That's what it's called. It's a restrictical.
If you've opted for a restricted cervical injection, then you felt a need, a very definite need, which means that you are advocating for the deceased. The reason that you've chosen to do it that way is because you know it's in the best interests of the deceased for them to be treated that way, generally, so that the presentation of the face is much better.
Yeah.
So considerations that people might present could be the fact that you've got two incision sites in the cervical region. Remember, anatomically, the cervical region is just the neck region.
See, now, for me, that in itself isn't necessarily a problem or a negative. I know that we have the standard place where we would make an incision. Mm-hmm. But when you get more comfortable, there's nothing to stop you playing with where you make that incision, but still having access to the common carotid arteries and your right internal jugular vein.
I mean, essentially, anywhere you make an incision, if you're confident that you've got the correct knowledge of suture techniques, then you won't leave.
No, and that's the
appreciable trace of anything.
And I think that's the key, isn't it? Because if you're using a carotid incision site, really, if you're very competent at an intradermal suture, once you've used that, it shouldn't be a visible,
indiscernible wrinkle would be what you're left with.
And
to somebody not in the know, as it were, that would never be interpreted as an incision site.
And you can take steps as well then, can't you? So whether you cover that, you know, if you've got a really neat line, sometimes just using something like a Vaseline or something, just to keep it from dehydrating and darkening. Some people might wax over it.
Yeah.
A little bit of cosmetic.
I mean, I would argue to wax over an intradermal's not necessary. No. Over a wormian, maybe, just to slightly fill the crevice.
But an intradermal that's well executed.
Yeah, I don't think.
So for me, I tend to look at if there's any natural creases on the neck.
Mm-hmm.
Because if there's a natural crease, then I'll just go in that crease. Now, yeah, granted, it might be higher than the clavicle. It may be, you know, maybe it's further up the neck than what you would typically use.
I would also argue, natural crease or no natural crease, when you have the head on a pillow, you create a crease.
Yes.
Yeah. So anticipating where that crease would be, you can recreate that with a head block.
You can, exactly. And that's one of the things that I will typically do is I'll cradle the head in my hand where the head block will be, and then I'll just mark out, well, where's that crease going to be, and then I'll place the head down to make my incision. So there are things you can do. I don't personally think a baseball suture should be used in that area.
I don't personally think a baseball suture has a place in embalming, and I'll go on record to say that. I think you can successfully look after any case these days without the implementation of a baseball suture. And anybody straight away thinking, well, what about the ventral suture of an autopsy case?
Do you use wormian?
Wormian.
Yeah.
Much neater, much nicer.
Again, though, isn't it?
And no more time to win.
That was just about to say, because once you do something consistently, like I do, if I'm suturing axillary, brachial, femoral, I will use baseball suture. I'm sorry, Andrew. I will.
I'm turning away.
But I certainly would not use one carotid. I know
this is going off subject and onto something else, but I just don't see why a wormian wouldn't be used instead of a baseball. I just can't see any situation.
But this is where it'll just depend on who's shown you, won't it?
Yeah.
Who's taught you?
Well, I was taught baseball.
Yeah, I mean, well, to be fair. we are going off topic, aren't we?
Yeah, let's get back on topic. Restricted cervical injection. So we talked about
certainly
the
for the carotid though, even if you know what, you know, so let's say someone's being dressed in a gown or a shroud or whatever you want to refer to it as. I still wouldn't use a baseball stitch, even though I know that that comes up the neck, because I have had situations myself where somebody has changed their mind and they've said, you know what, I know I said I wanted my mum, sister, brother in this, but actually now I want them in,
and
then provided. And that's absolutely fair.
And it just supports my view on there's no place for a baseball.
Yeah, I get you. I do. It is literally personal preference, isn't it? So, for example, axillary in the armpit, I would do a baseball because does what it says on the tin, and no one's going to be looking in someone's armpit. Or maybe they will. Anyway.
But what I'm saying, that, and I'm just saying, but all you're doing is condoning it by doing it.
Condoning a baseball suit, Joe?
Yeah.
Because I don't have a problem with it in certain places.
It just is a problem.
Okay. Ooh, let us know what you think, guys. Are you anti-baseball suit, Joe? But it's a consideration, and that's where we were. So maybe we need... So, next episode...
Sutures,
incision right, sites, incision definitely. Sites, sutures. Right, there we go. Next episode locked in. But yeah, so consideration. So considerations. So we've again the type of suture, how it's going to look afterwards. Is it more difficult if the person is obese to access?
Well. In that, you have to appreciate that the vessels are going to be deeper,
yeah,
because of the excess adipose mm-hmm. tissue, which, you know, can be quite substantial in the cervical region. But that said, having a head off the head block with the neck extended is still yeah. going to raise things to a reachable level. And at the end of the day, you don't have an alternative.
I think that's the key, isn't it? You need to employ this technique.
Mm. And you're not going to achieve.
What I will say about it is I've embalmed a fair few people where I've decided, you know, they are obese. They've got severe congestion in the head. Mm-hmm. But that's to be expected.
And just as an addition to that, severe congestion of the head... If you implement a restricted cervical, you have access to both
jugular. And that is exactly what I was just about to say. And that's why I will do it.
The reason we use the one on the right is because we've got an almost direct access to the right atrium.
With proximal
they
drainage.
Are both as beneficial as each other draining.
Distally. Yeah. And this is something that... So is it might be a bit trickier for me operationally. But the benefit, again... Far, far outweighs mm-hmm. not doing it.
Yeah, absolutely.
So yeah.
But you're the sole advocate for the deceased.
And that's...
You have to do what you have to do. Yeah. I mean, fortunately, these trickier situations aren't everyday occurrences.
No.
But you do need the skill set in order to be able to manage it.
Yeah.
And that's the purpose of us having this discussion, you know, to put it out there for people listening that... You know, these are ways around significant problem.
Yeah. I think that in itself, just having that access, granted we were talking about saturation and treating, but giving us access to get that drainage from the facial tissues before we're injecting.
But then, you know, equally that could be achieved just by doing a two-point injection and raising both of the carotid arteries. You don't necessarily have to implement the restricted cervical.
No.
Because it's just getting the point across that the restricted is you restricting
yes.
the proximal portion of the carotid that you're not injecting through.
Yes. As well as then allowing any fluid that's taken the posterior route
to follow a path of least resistance and come out through your drainage tubes.
So therefore, then when you do inject distally to treat and embalm the head, you're doing so from scratch. Well,
there's a lot that we've said about.
I know. So much for a short topic.
I think it's important for anybody listening to appreciate, you know, that no two embalmers generally agree on everything.
And
there are differences in practice.
Oh, it's going to be an exciting next episode. Maybe the next one. Do you think it'll be under an hour? I'm not sure.
Maybe we can be ambitious and introduce new sutures.
Ooh. What, is that after we've finished fighting about baseball?
Yes. Yes, we absolutely have to eradicate the baseball before we can even contemplate starting anything new.
Gosh. So our next episode then, injection sites, injection and drainage sites, and therefore, subsequently, sutures.
Perfect. Do we need to talk a little bit about some reasons that we would employ the restricted cervical? I think we've only said edema.
Well,
at this stage.
I mean, we did say at any point where you would want to treat the head differently.
Yeah.
But if you want to provide a few as a wrap-up.
Well, I'm only thinking jaundice.
Jaundice is a very good one.
It would be a go-to for me if I came across a jaundice case.
Definitely jaundice.
Only because I have a very definite need to treat the body different from viewable areas.
Yeah.
Decomposition.
Yep, decomposition, absolutely.
Remember, that's all about the fact that the tissue substance is less in the head.
Mm-hmm.
So even though a high preservative demand would be necessary, it doesn't have to be as high as what you would need to introduce.
You may have a situation where you need to complete some reconstruction or restoration to maybe the face, but actually the body is fine.
Yep.
So
that could be a flip situation where you want the face and the head to be firmer than what necessarily the body might require.
Yeah.
And that does sometimes come from traumatic injury.
Yeah, I can think of a couple of times where I've used that.
Any facial bone restoration, for example, you need to have that firm base before you can then start to entertain restorative work.
Yeah.
So a restricted cervical injection would very definitely pay its way there.
Yeah.
Yeah, so lots of different examples there.
Yeah. Well then. So we've been the eternal debate.
We have, and we continue to be.
We've had a little bicker. And
it's all
we've
in
got
good.
our next episode topic already locked in. So
fantastic.
Wonderful, and we will be back soon.
We will indeed.